Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. All right, this is the Mail Report for the April 2011 trades. That means we're going to be talking about the sales of the top 300 trade paperback, hardcovers, graphic novels, original manga, all that kind of fun stuff for the month. This is what sold through Diamond to retailers. We're not talking direct market. We're not talking convention sales. Usual caveats apply. So, I mean, we got, a pretty good split this time around, wouldn't you say, for the breakdown of the trades, Chris?
I think so. You know, the one thing that jumped right out at me, if I can scoot ahead real quick, was the maximum prices coming out. The DC Comics maxed out at $39.99, and then Marvel maxed out at $125 for their highest ticket item, and then Image had a $100 ticket item. And I'm like, whoa, that, you know, geez, that, I don't know if that skewed the numbers or not, but Jesus.
Well, I think that's really interesting, particularly when you combine the fact that IDW, Dark Horse, and Dynamite, their top item for each of them was a $49.99 item.
Yes, sir.
So those publishers and Marvel Image, all of those had bigger ticket items than DC had with its $39.99. I really think DC is making a smart move there by not really offering a ton of big-ticket items. Now, they do it periodically, to be fair, but they've got a ton of stuff. I mean, they've got a huge, huge library. If they wanted to be doing a $100, you know, oh my God, you've got to get this kind of thing every month, they could.
They could, easily. You know, that's what Marvel does. You know, they pump it out hardcover, trade paperback, doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, look at what IDW is doing. They did that artist edition or whatever of the Rocketeer stuff. They're doing it with Thor. I mean, there's a lot of things that justify the big ticket price. The question is this the economy? Is this the market? Is this the right time for those kinds of big ticket items?
Mm-hmm.
And right now, again, Image the $100 one, Marvel the $125 one. Those are by far the largest. But even that $50 price tag, I think, is starting to feel a little hefty these days to a lot of people.
Well, yeah, and if you look at even the Marvel Masterworks, they're all going up $54, or, you know, $59.99, $64.99. You know, I haven't seen a Marvel Masterwork priced out at $49.99 in quite some time, if not the past 2 years.
Well, that's kind of a double-edged sword because, I mean, they've held some of the prices on those for a long time. And you look at how much the comic price has gone up in that same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they had some of these at around the $49, you know, $50 price point 10, 20 years ago, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
And correct me if I'm wrong on that. But, you know, that was back when comics were like half the price they are now.
Right. Well, we've kind of talked about that in the past episodes about, you know, holding the line at $2.99. Well, you can do that in the comic side, but the trade paperbacks haven't seemed to go down in price at all. When they went up to $3.99 for both the big two, the prices for the trades went up, and so far the trades have stayed that way.
Well, let's talk about the pricing for a bit. We'll kind of jump around this episode
on
the order we do stuff. You know, I already filtered the list of the top trades to everything that was above that $40 price point. So that $125 item was at rank 33, and that was the Thor by Walter Simonson omnibus hardcover.
Which, by the way, I must get.
Now,
I got to get that book.
This is probably going to be a very interesting companion to that artist edition that IDW is doing. Because
mm-hmm.
this is an actual reading copy, whereas the other is a wow, let's appreciate the art copy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those for a Walt Simonson Thor fan is probably the way to go. But man, that's going to set you back some change. But that did 1,612 units. Not too bad, actually. Pretty good for the $125 price tag. Now, the $100 item is down at rank 99, and that's the Battle Chasers Anthology hardcover. It did 793 units. And I know there's a following for Battle Chasers, but I don't know, a $100 hardcover for that seems pricey to me.
Yes, I agree.
And then at $99.99 was the X-Men Omnibus Volume 2 hardcover from Marvel at rank 73. That was that's old 987 units or so. So not too bad, not too bad. Those are the big ticket items. Again, the omnibuses for Marvel, particularly the X-Men, the Thor, I can understand that. Then we start getting into that $59.99 price tag. We've got at rank 51 the Marvel Masterworks Atlas Era Strange Tales Volume 4, did 1,321 estimated units. We've got the Walking Dead
Compendium, yeah.
Yeah, Volume 1 trade paperback. 414 units of reorder activity for a known total through the direct market of 12,257 units. That's down at rank 228 there. So, Walking Dead, pretty bankable.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the $60, that covers, what, 24 issues?
I believe so. Yeah, 24, 25, something like that, yeah.
Good price for the money. And, I mean, Kirkman has shown that he can put this out in practically any edition and it will sell.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's even doing a board game or a card game or something
is
like that.
Is he really?
He's doing a game of some sort. I forget what type. I saw it and did the You've Gotta Be Kidding Me.
Do you think they're going to be doing an animated feature of that?
I don't know. I would not be surprised if eventually that happens, and that could be cool. I mean, if he gets the right animation studio, from my money,
if they do I thought about this when I was a C2E2, and I saw the Wolverine and the Iron Man Japanese animated not manga but anime. Yeah, I got a sneak peek at the Wolverine anime, and I'm like, man, this would be sweet if it was like Walking Dead. You know, it would be really cool, I think.
You'd have to go with a really good Japanese anime studio for that, and I think it could be very well done.
Yeah, and it could be like dark, like a, you know, Vampire Hunter D or something like that.
I mean, personally,
really, really cool to do.
I'd love to see somebody on the web do kind of a spoof of it in the old, like, Filmation style. Something where it has been kind of whitewashed into Saturday morning, you know, appropriateness, the, you know, limited animation. Now, granted, I love some of the old Filmation stuff, but it would be so wrong for that property.
Right.
It would be kind of funny.
Well, you could do, like, the Hanna-Barbera, like, Johnny Quest, like, animated,
the Scooby-Doo
animated
take
style,
on
like
it.
Walking Dead. And, you know, have, like, Race Bannon is Rick and everything like that. That'd be awesome.
That would be funny. Hey, sooner or later, it's going to come out as a video game. It's going to come out as just about everything possible. Yep. And why shouldn't it?
The Walking Dead pinball machine. You know, I mean, come on. I can't wait.
It's making money for Kirkman, and at the end of the day, that's the point of the exercise. Mm-hmm. If he happens to tell a great story, so much the better. I think at the first half of Walking Dead, he has. The second half, for me, not so much. I really think he's been coasting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that also tends to correspond with the time frame. He's been the publisher at Image. He's been doing Skybound. He's been doing a couple other titles. I think his focus has been splintered across all of those. But, you know, when Walking Dead was at its peak, and I'm going to say mid-40s, 50s, somewhere in that issue range, with the governor and all that kind of stuff, it ended on a strong note every issue. It just had me going, wow. Now I'm reading it, and it's like, yeah, okay, another issue. Now, I'm also a hard sell for that property, so it may be an unfair statement to make, but, you know, it's his cornerstone property. There's no question about that. So, again, $60 for 24 issues, not a bad deal at all.
No.
And then we've got a couple of other items here at the...
$54.99 was... Marvel Masterworks Doctor Strange Volume 5 did 1,370.
And then we got a ton of items at the $49.99 price point.
Yeah, look who the Dark Horse, IDW, and Dynamite. I mean, jeez. Let's
see, we got the Vampirella Archives Volume 3 with 984 units. The Genius Isolated Life and Art of Alex Toth hardcover.
Volume 1 of 3 with that one.
Really interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. That, of course, is from IDW, 972 units. IDW's Archie's Seven Decades of America's Favorite Teenagers, 681 units. It's always interesting to me that you get a hardcover like this of Archie material when Archie's still publishing, and it, I think, shows that they're trying to play to their strengths as a publisher. They don't tend to do, you know, high format collectible or collected editions and stuff.
Well, you know, Archie's got the there's Archie, and then we've got IDW doing reprint material, and then Dark Horse has got their Archie archives going on too.
But it's interesting that Archie themselves, Archie the company, is farming out to these other ones that are better suited, I guess,
yeah,
to doing those collected editions. I think it's a smart move.
Mm-hmm.
I think they could have done it in-house if they'd really wanted to, but I think it's smart for them to kind of play to their strengths and stick to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Abrams did the, they did the big giant deluxe edition of the Archie Marys hardcover.
Well, and I mean,
look so at yeah, it. They've been farming it out, which is good for them. You know, I'm sure they've got some sort of creative control or some sort of vision that how they want the material to be treated.
I have to imagine that, and I have to imagine these other publishers came to them with a good deal. In other words, something that fit vision. You know, the respectful. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Not just we'll slap it together, we'll throw a cover on it, see what happens. It's like no. Mm-hmm. Now, with Dark Horse, they got four items here, all of which are archives. We've got Volume 8 of the Turok Son of Stone archives, Volume 3 above that, actually, of the Flash Gordon comic book archives, Nexus archives, Volume 12, and Volume 3 of the Mighty Samson archives. Those did from 501 for Flash Gordon, 479 for Turok, 366 for Nexus, and 329 for Mighty Samson. Now, the Mighty Samson, Turok, Doc Solar, and was there one other property they were doing? On the comic side, I think they've decided to discontinue the revival of those properties.
They did. Mm-hmm. I heard that.
Makes sense. If it's not selling, you got to pay a license fee, too. I mean, that's mm-hmm. a hard combination. But, I mean, that's, you know, quite a few items right there above that kind of high price point. But really, I mean, all said and done, that's really only 13 items.
I could be wrong, but I think the Flash Gordon one from Dark Horse, Volume 3, I think that was the last one that they were going to do. It was only going to be a three-volume set. I don't think they were going to do any more.
Now, was that just a decision, or was that a lack of material to do a fourth?
I think that was a decision. That was their editorial decision, yeah.
Hey, it makes sense.
Yeah. But Nexus, I mean, they've been kicking those out for years. I'm surprised that number is so low at 366, because you figure you want to complete your collection, you know. I know I've got 11. I still have to get number 12, but I'm getting all those Nexus ones. They're pretty good.
I think part of it is they need to target the newer readers.
Mm-hmm.
I think these are going to people who used to get Nexus back in the day,
mm-hmm.
and they need to branch out and treat it almost as if it's a new property mm-hmm. in terms of how they market it. In other words, get the people who weren't reading comics back then interested in this material starting at Volume 1 and go up.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and Dark Horse has started with Dr. Solar putting them in softcover format, which I think is a good way to go.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah.
But if you look at the breakdown of the prices, I mean, we've said that there are a couple of high-ticket items here, and there are. But there are a couple of price points that were really kind of popular this time around. The most popular being the 1999 price point, mm-hmm. which had 51 items. I mean, that's one out of six items was that. Now, a little bit more popular than that was the 1499 item, which had 54 items. Now, right there, that's over a third of the list at the $15 or $20 point. You know, we had another 25 items at the $9.99 price point, 15 at $10.99, 20 at $12.99, another two dozen at $17.99, another 25 at $24.99, and then 13 at $29.99. So what we're seeing is, I mean, just that $29.99, there were as many items there as there were, you know, at the $49.99 and above point.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing, I think, at the $30 or below, I mean, that's where the majority, overwhelming majority of these items are. You know, and I think that's a good sign. And a smart move by these publishers is just get this stuff more affordable.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to suggest it was overpriced before or anything of the sort. What I am trying to suggest is there is so much collected material coming out every week that fighting it out based solely on content is kind of a tough sell these days.
Right.
You know, you've got to be price conscious. You've got to make it affordable, yet you've got to balance that with not being a better deal than the monthly comics, or people won't go to the monthly comics. It's a really interesting balance they've got to maintain here.
Yeah, I kind of touched on something like that in an article I did a few months ago. You know, trying to get the best deal for your dollar. And really what it comes down to is really take a look at your pre-order, whether it be DCBS or with your local comic book store, that you really have to take a hard look and see what is, you know, the best percentage off that you can find. And if it's something you want but it's not that a good deal, you may have to wait until you can find it at a convention for 50% off or something like that. Well, you really have to be price conscious these days.
Oh, totally. And shop around. I mean, sometimes you can get the best price through a DCBS or an in-stock trades or through Amazon.
Right.
Or, like you said, at a convention. Mm-hmm. Now, keep in mind, when you see it at a convention where it's blowing it out, that may not mean that, oh, it just didn't sell. You know, it may mean that that's kind of how that convention market is working these days.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people, when they go to conventions, are only going to be buying the cheaper stuff, looking for those good deals. And that's fine and that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, again, making sure nobody is getting kind of just run through the ringer financially to make that deal happen.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't benefit us if it's the retailer, if it's the distributor, or if it's the publisher that gets kind of soaked in the whole process. We want them to get this stuff out at a fair price and, you know, be able to get that next volume out, etc.
Right. And there's also that whole catch-22 thing as far as go through Amazon, or do you go through your local comic book store to help support the local economy and a local guy down the street and keep the industry alive on a local level and the comic book store level too?
And I'll admit, that's somewhere I've been slacking off lately. I have not spent as much time or money over at, like, Tribe Comics as I probably should.
Yeah.
They're a good store. They're friendly guys. I like them. It's just a matter of not having had the time to go over there as often.
Mm-hmm.
And typically when I do, I'll leave there with, you know, couple of role-playing games, couple of comics, that kind of stuff.
But doesn't it kill you when you walk out of there and you look at your receipt and you're like, I could have gotten these online for a lot cheaper, you know? I mean, that's where, you know, but
that's typically why I don't buy many comics from them, but I'm glad they've got a good role-playing game stuff because I want to support them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, those are also, you know, like, they're the price point of these trades and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And just a 10% difference in discount or whatever can add up over time. So it is a tough thing. And I certainly don't want to suggest I'm treating a local store like a charity case, because that is not the case.
Right.
I don't mind paying, you know, full fare for the role-playing games, because I haven't really found a good place to get all of them on a discount, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, these are two guys that are being very entrepreneurial. They've opened up their own store. I want them to do well. The benefit to me of them doing well is they're going to be around when I get to the point of, oh, crap, I need to go get this off the rack so Bob and I have something we can review this week or something
exactly.
like that.
Right.
Or I just forgot to get it on pre-order, or it surprised me, I didn't know about it, you know, whatever.
Well, that's how I pick up Bone or the Project Superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so hard to order those books because, one, you don't know when the hell Bone is coming out because you can never find it in the solicitations because Jeff Smith, for whatever reason, he doesn't publish them. He wants to publish them quarterly, but it doesn't work out that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then with the Project Superpowers, you've got all those different covers, and I like to get the plain old Alex Ross cover, you know?
Old Alex Ross cover.
Those on DCBS.
I'm still wrapping my mind around that one for a sec. The fact that an Alex Ross cover can be referred to as the plain old one is just funny to me.
Well, you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, but that's the majority. I mean, I don't want the negative variant one or whatever. I mean, it's so stupid. But when my point is, when you go on like DCBS, and it's no fault for Zach and those guys, but they don't know the correct order code sometimes for that cover because Dynamite hasn't supplied it to them. All they have is an order code for the comic, and you don't know which cover you're going to get because they don't have it supplied. So what I do, I wait for it to come out at the comic book store, go over on that Wednesday and pick it up.
Actually,
I know they're going to have it.
That's kind of true and kind of not true, as I understand it.
Well, I got screwed a few times, so that's
No. My point is, if you pick up a comic book and you look at the barcode, there's going to be a section of, like, 10 numbers and then another 5. The 10 numbers, I believe, and I could be mistaken on this, are the equivalent to, but are not, the ISS number, which is the International Serial... I forget what it stands for off the top of my head, but it's the equivalent of an ISBN number, okay, but for a periodical comic. That identifies the title, essentially. But then the other 5 are... The first 3, I believe, are the issue number, and the next 2 are the variant, if you will.
Okay.
Now, I could be wrong on that, but I think that's how you would be able to tell the different ones. But frankly, these days, I think every publisher ought to be putting, certainly on their comics, their trades too, for that matter, a clear indication of the title, the issue, the variant, the cover price,
mm-hmm,
preferably the barcode, all in one spot, all easily available without having to flip the book over, open it up, or, you know, do other gymnastics.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is just... there are ways they could make some of this stuff easier, and I think, frankly, if they made it easier, this stuff would sell better.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, it was interesting this month because at one point on the comic side, and Bob and I talked about this a little, there was a point where the first-ranked item would do, like, twice or so what the second-ranked item would do, and then it would kind of go from there. Now, every once in a while, we'll get that on the trade side, and this is one of those times. Now, our top-ranked item this time is Fables Volume 15 Rose Red Trade Paperback, 11,604 units. That's pretty good. Now, that's down a bit from the total known sales of the previous volume, but Fables is one of those that's going to show up on the list every couple of times. We're probably going to see this on the list another easily 3 or 4 times before Volume 16 comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it'll have time to accumulate a bit more. But the number 2 item, Boys Volume 8 Highland Laddie Trade Paperback, 5,284 units. Again, not bad. But look at that difference of, what, 6,400?
Yeah, exactly.
So, pretty big difference there. And, you know, I see the top of the list on both sides, both on the trade and the comic side, as, I don't want to say the proverbial high watermark, because I think things could do better. But I think it's certainly showing that there is an achievable number of, clearly, in this market, something was able to do 11,604 or so units.
Mm-hmm.
So how come most of the others couldn't? How come, by the time we get down to, let's see, it would be out of the top 70-ish, you know, things are doing a tenth of that level? I mean, it drops pretty far, pretty fast. So, let's see, 1,160 would be exactly a tenth of this, and we hit that at rank 60, we'll say 64, really between 64 and 63. So there's a 10 to 1 difference between about how, we'll say rank 63, that reorder activity for Morning Glory's Volume 1 trade paperback did compared to that top item, or the first month of orders for Darkwing Duck Volume 2, Crisis on Infinite Darkwings, did compared to that that Fables one.
Well, I think Fables and Vertigo overall sell better in trade paperback than they do on the monthly side. Do you think?
Certainly.
Yeah. So that we have that there. And I think, you know, the way the Boys always shows up in the top 10, Kirkman's Invincible always shows up in the top 10. You know, we've talked about it before, there are just some properties that do much, much better, but as far as
I agree with what you're saying, not all properties are equal, that's a given.
Right.
Some will simply sell a hell of a lot more than others, period, no question. But we've got one item at over 11,600, two items over 5,000, another two items over 3,000. From there, you know, we've got another three that are doing over 2,500. But, I mean, we start dropping off pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. It's not why did these couple sell so much better than a few. It's why did so many not even come remotely close mm-hmm. to that? Because we drop below 500 by the time we're at rank 189. So the midpoint on this list is just below 600 units. To get to that 11,000 units would take, I guess, only the bottom 34 items on the list. But you know what I mean. It's mm-hmm. one of those where I certainly don't expect everything to sell to be the top seller. I mean, it's obviously impossible. But we're seeing things that even in this day of pretty, you know, modest sales, still able to do the 5,000, again, the boys, the Invincibles, kind of the ever-true ones. We're seeing reorder activity of 3,881 for Green Lantern Secret Origin. Granted, with the movie coming out, all the current popularity of Green Lantern, not a big surprise. It's a question, though, of why do most of these things sell less than an average of one copy per store, figuring around 2,500 stores out there?
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of the problem is there's so much of this stuff. I mean, it's how many of these things are new this month? And the answer is a hell of a lot of them.
Right.
You know, the majority of them. So there's a lot more competition, I think, on the trade paperback shelves than there used to be. And frankly, a lot of these are going to pop up the once and go away. You know, that Gotham City Sirens Volume 1 trade paperback at rank 10 there, 2,475 units. Pretty good opening numbers. Are we ever going to see that on the list again?
Right. Yeah, we touch on that just about every other month and on a book like that. You know, are we going to see it again? And we haven't really tracked that.
Actually, if you look...
What are we tracking?
Look at column I.
Okay.
And that's the number of times the item had been on the list before.
Okay, that's okay, right.
I try to track some of the stuff.
You try to track it, right.
But it's one of those things that, because there are so many titles out, and this is causing problems, I think, on the comic side, too. You know, they're flooding the market, and they're cannibalizing their sales to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
Well, do you think the problem is that they're competing too, like, Marvel, are they competing too much against themselves, or are they just trying to flood the market and try to just compete with everybody? I mean...
I think it's a matter of if you start a marathon, somebody trips and everyone goes down.
Right.
Did they try to trip everybody or not? It was just too damn crowded. I don't know that Marvel is... I mean, obviously Marvel is not trying to cannibalize their sales. They're trying mm-hmm. to cannibalize DC's and everyone else's. But DC's, to a lesser degree, trying to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, part of it is Marvel just has so many items coming out. I mean, they had...
But you know what it is, and this is, you just hit the nail on the head, and I don't know if you even realized it. Marvel and DC are trying to flood the market, right?
They're putting out so much material.
Whether it be in comics, whether it be in trade paperbacks, whether it be whatever. But then you look at a few small properties, Fables, Boys, Walking Dead. They don't have to flood the market because they are very good comic books. And that's really what it takes.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because I kind of touched on that a little, but not really explicitly, on my article in CBR this month. And a lot of the thrust of my article this time was how transient sales are on the comic side, because they'll keep renumbering a title, canceling it, starting it up.
I am so over that.
Oh, yeah. And it's gotten people out of the habitual buying nature. And... it's gotten to the point where DC and Marvel really need to focus on kind of the ongoing and getting back into the habitual thing. But I really think DC and Marvel are playing a different game, if you will, and I use game in more the game theory sense than a real game. I mean, this is a business. But they're playing a different one than the smaller publishers are. The smaller publishers, I think, make the right choice, particularly the back half of previews guys. To a lesser degree, I think it's probably the right choice for Image, IDW, Dynamite, and Dark Horse.
Mm-hmm.
But
and
doing,
Boom. I'd say Boom. I'd throw Boom in there.
Boom is the back half. But yeah.
Yeah.
But so is Dynamite, I guess. But, and again, those are kind of that middle tier publishers. These guys are kind of between the small, you know, one or two title guys, or even the five or six, but not the, oh my God, they're doing 60 or 70 titles. So there's kind of those three arenas with some overlap. But while Marvel and DC are slugging it out with the X-Men, the Fantastic Four, Batman, Superman, the evergreen titles, and all of these fly-by-night, you know, Fear Itself, Flashpoint, you know, other short-term, let's turn it over every few months miniseries, which I think is a bad move for them because it gets rid of the habitual sales. I think it's smart for the smaller guys to come in strong with a solid property, get it out there, market it, get it out on time, make a splash, go out, come in with the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially do a kind of a guerrilla warfare approach on Marvel and DC. You know, I think that's really the way to go. And, you know, if you need to try a couple of different properties, different creators, different artists, whatever, it gives you that ability. It allows you to focus on, you know, kind of a sniper approach, if you will, versus the machine gun scatter fire approach that Marvel and DC seem to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need, you know, three or four Hulk titles, 15 Batman titles, you know, 20 or whatever Flashpoint titles?
Well, that was one of my things. I've always kind of touched on that. I mean, what if DC, it'll never happen, right? But what if DC only published, for 1 year, published 20 titles? That's it.
You know, I think that's a
little... You got your two Batman, you got your two Superman, you got your Justice League, your Aquaman, your Green Arrow, your Wonder Woman.
I don't think it's a number of titles issue.
No.
I think it's
what I mean is they could, you could, everybody would be reading DC Comics though.
What if you did say 40 or even maybe 50, but with the exception of very, very, very few key properties, like say Batman, every title has a very clear, this is different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't need 15 titles set in Gotham City. Mm-hmm. Instead of that, let's have a Batman title, maybe one where it's a team of whatever, but fundamentally different, okay? If we want to do another vigilante, you know, type thing, let's set him over in some other city with some other twist to where it's not, oh, it's just another Batman title.
Like Green Arrow, you mean?
Maybe a Green Arrow, but even that is, okay, he's got arrows versus a Batarang.
Right.
How different is he? Sometimes very, sometimes not at all. Okay, I certainly wouldn't do like a Batman and a Moon Knight-ish kind of a thing. Too similar, you know?
Right.
Obviously, Moon Knight's Marvel and he's nuts, but other than that, but do something...
And that's just the tip of the iceberg with Moon Knight.
Yes, gosh. But do something where, I mean, maybe bring back some of the war characters. Go bring back, you know, some of the more adventurer-type characters. Do
right.
some mystery books. Do some westerns. Do some supernatural.
Well, they are to an extent. They are doing that. They're trying to get, you know, Jonah Hex out there, and they're doing a very good job. They're doing a little Doc Savage, which isn't doing very well. You know, I mean, well, they do experiment, but
and I'm not saying they don't experiment.
Yeah,
I'm saying the majority of their lineup is too similar.
Oh yeah, it totally is.
You know, it needs to not be a franchise. Which is like throwing a net over a small area.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be a really long, strong chain where maybe there's tangential links between some of the titles, you know, but overall, it's not like, well, if I get this one, it's like, you know, picking up a magnet and everything nearby comes up with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I think the size of the X-Men franchise at Marvel, the size of the Batman franchise at DC are not good things for the publishers.
No, they're huge. Yeah.
It comes down to, do I get one, do I get all, do I get none?
Right.
You know, and I think that's what's going to cause problems with Flashpoint, and what's causing, I think, problems with sales in general is it's hard to dip your toe into an area because the minute you do, it wants to just, you know, yank you all the way underwater and you drown. You know, so it's like, well, if I think I'm going to get one Batman title, but gee, it may cross over to every other one at some point, maybe I won't get that one.
I have not picked up Batman for that reason. I haven't picked up Batman in years.
People don't pick up the X-Men for that reason. They're not picking up, you know, the Ultimate titles. And I'm not saying everybody's not picking it up. Obviously, that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
But we want people to be coming into all of these titles as easily as possible and make it as hard as possible to leave.
Mm-hmm.
One of the downsides of the number of a number of new trades of collected material on this list this month is most of these have a nice beginning, middle, and end to the story in the trade paperback.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good for the trade paperback. That Gotham City Sirens, Volume 1, it covers, what, 5, 6 issues?
Mm-hmm.
The end of that 5th or 6th issue of that comic series, guess what? Nice, clean ending.
Right.
Okay, I can get off at this point. Maybe people do.
I guess that's kind of why I've liked books like Punisher and Daredevil over the years, is because they don't really cross over. I mean, they occasionally cross over, but for the most part, it's their own title, and I like that. I mean, you know, when you read Batman these days, you've got to read Batman and Red Robin and Robin and, you know, Detective and everything, you know.
I think that was one of the strengths of Brubaker's Captain America.
I loved that run. I stopped getting it when they renumbered it back to 600, though.
Oh, yeah, but for a number of years, it was pretty self-contained. It pretty much ignored a lot of big events.
Yeah, it was like Bucky and his adventure, right.
And it was good.
Yeah, it was very good.
So the lack of crossovers, I think, forces a title to be stronger in and of itself, and that's good. But even in those cases, in a lot of those story arcs, there's enough of a sense of ending and new beginning between two issues to serve as a jumping-off point. That's bad. Mm-hmm. When I first got into comics, it was the never-ending battle. You know, and that's part of why there's an era of comics around the 70s and 80s that is virtually impossible to gracefully collect into trade paperbacks.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the early 70s, things were pretty much one or two issue series, maybe 3 or 4 part. I mean, there were the occasional 5-part arcs, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But you could pretty much trade easily, and maybe you had to say, well, we'll put 7 in this one because then we have a 5-issue arc, or, you know, whatever. You could work it.
Mm-hmm.
But then you hit the point in the late 70s, early 80s, where it was something happens in an issue, and then it bleeds over into the next, and the next, and the next, and the next, and the next.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of this ever-going tapestry or whatever, where it wasn't really a graceful spot to say, well, we're going to cut it right here. Because then it's, well, what happened here? Or I'm lost because this didn't get introduced. You know, granted, they were more accessible comics back then.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like it is now, where you've got a very clear beginning, middle, and end to a trade paperback arc, which, again, was 5, 6 issues usually of a comic title, meaning at the end of each 6 issues, you can get off. Only 1 in 6 is a good jumping-on point.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of transient nature of sales, I think, is killing the industry. And I'm not blaming trade paperbacks per se. I am blaming whoever, either the creative side, editorial side, marketing side, wherever this is happening, and frankly, they may not even be aware that they're doing this, but really, things are being geared for the trades.
Mm-hmm.
They're being written for trades, they're being, you know, that is not, I mean, look at these numbers, that is not the primary market for most of these titles. Obviously, a case could be made for Fables, maybe it's a little lopsided, but even that 11,604... You know, how does that stack up against where the title is on the monthly side? And it's doing 18,811 for issue 104. So, yeah, we'll say 3/5 on the comic side, 2/5 on the trade side. So it's not like it's a 1-to-10 ratio or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the comics are where, at least originally, the lion's share of the money is. The other difference here is over time, those trades keep selling, whereas the comic issues don't.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, these trades are not bringing in the majority of the money, as far as I can tell. Or at least, it sure doesn't look that way through the diamond numbers. The mass market numbers for these kinds of properties, of superhero stuff for the most part, don't really do great in the mass market, if at all. You know, there are other things that do well there. That's a fundamentally different kind of a reader than we've got in the comic shops.
Mm-hmm.
The publishers need to be getting back to that never-ending battle versus kind of the ever-ending battle where it's just every so often, oh, I can jump off now. And need to get people back into the habitual reading habit. If they can do that on the comic side, I think that'll help the trade sales too.
Yeah, it's habitual.
hey, if you can't get people to come back for the next installment, something's not right.
Yeah. Well, that's like, you know, that reminds me of when I was at Free Comic Book Day. I was over at Detroit Comics, and guy walked in with his kids, got his free comics, walked out the door. And it's like, looks like you're not going to be, you know, that's not what it's there for. But it's like, and, you know, and Brian was like, yeah, okay, whatever. You know, you want to look around? And the guy's like, no, I got my free comics. You know, it's like you're not going to get that guy into the store to read books or to teach his kids about books. You know, to the, and that was, I just found that kind of sad, you know. And the store was packed.
I went to Austin Books for Free Comic Book Day. They let you pick out 10 books. They've got a great selection.
10, wow.
Yeah, so that's why I went there. You know, long line to get to the comics. About an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes, I think.
Really? For a line to get in the store?
To get into the tent in front of the store for the free comics.
No kidding.
No kidding.
Wow.
So I had time to talk to the people behind me. It was a father and his son. His son, I'm going to say 12-ish.
Okay.
I could be off by a couple of years in either direction. Young teenager at best. I mean, if he could not have been over 14.
Okay.
I'd have put him again more towards that 12.
All right. Well, my boy's 11 going on 12. Yep.
We were talking about some of the comics he was reading and stuff. He wasn't too keen on how Flashpoint had been marketed and stuff. And I forget which other ones specifically we talked about, but there were quite a few I was thinking, you know, I consider those a little almost out of my comfort zone at times, based on the material in them. Should a kid that age really have read things like V for Vendetta,
yeah.
Watchmen, I forget what some of the other ones were.
He wasn't 12. He was probably 13 or 14 then.
No.
Really?
I this was something
I know my kid, and he could never get through Watchmen.
I'm trying to remember exactly which ones he mentioned, but they were ones that... It's like as a kid when you watch the old Adam West Batman series, you get one level out of it.
Yeah.
You go back as an adult, you get a different level.
Yeah.
That kind of a thing.
Okay.
And it was one of those where the father was there taking him to get the free comics and stuff, but I don't really think the dad had the least bit of interest in the comics.
Huh.
And I think that was unfortunate. I think he could have steered the kid a little better into stuff he would have enjoyed a bit more, and frankly, I think would have been more appropriate for somebody that age. Now,
yeah.
This kid seemed to be okay with what he was reading and stuff. I was just kind of surprised.
Yeah.
And the kid was surprisingly well-read, and, you know, it's, oh, have you read this? And, of course, I didn't want to say, odds are almost anything you mention I will have read.
Yeah.
Because he did pull out a few that I haven't read because they were more Vertigo-ish titles or something like that than I tend to get into.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of funny. But it's one of those, you know, how many people from the Free Comic Book Days are going to be coming back and picking up those properties?
Right.
You know, we're seeing a softening of sales on the trade side. We're certainly seeing that on the comic side. It's been 10 years of Free Comic Book Days. We've had a plethora of movies come out. Comics are widely accepted and appreciated in general and in theory by the mass audience. But not to the point of actually buying one, you know? And I find that to be very... It's kind of interesting, kind of depressing in so much as... I mean, how many movies do we have coming out this summer? And do you really think we're going to see any kind of a bump in sales on any title as a result?
You know, I was thinking about that when I emailed you. And one twist, because I know you kind of covered it with Bob, but... One twist I thought about, and, you know, they put out Free Comic Book Day the same weekend Thor comes out.
Yeah.
Like, what if they moved Free Comic Book Day till, oh, let's say, the third weekend of June or something like that, when school is out for the summertime, everybody's seen Thor, they may have seen an animated movie, Captain America is going to be coming out the next week or two, Green Lantern in the next week or two. You're right into that summer, well, you know, mode.
I think they made the decision a few years back to do it the first weekend in May so as not to be tied into whatever hot movie of the year is there, and to do it before kids go off at summer camp and stuff like that or what have you.
Yeah, I guess.
Now, whether what kids are doing really matters is I think, a moot point.
Yeah.
I saw a surprising number of kids at Free Comic Book Day, so I thought that was good, because it also brought their parents, by and large.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think tying it into, you know, coinciding with the movies and stuff doesn't really make sense. Because, I mean, I don't think we're going to see any kind of big influx of sales on Thor because of the movie.
Right.
Now, granted, we just had, you know, Mighty Thor number one, the second highest item on the list.
Right.
I'll say that one time slow.
And I think it's an opportunity for fanboys like you and I to go out and buy, you know, what Thor we've been missing. Because I know several people that went out, of course they're going to see the movie, but they also went out and picked up the Walt Simonson book. And I wonder if the Walt Simonson book would have sold better in January as opposed to that big Thor weekend with Fear Itself coming out and Journey into Mystery getting relaunched and everything like that. I mean, I think it felt more is for the fanboy than I think the normal consumer. And I've come to realize that over the years.
Well, certainly. I think the Simonson stuff is for those who are fans of the character, of his run on the book, of the artist. I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
I think no matter how well any of these properties do, I mean, Iron Man is not selling appreciably better after having had two very successful movies
mm-hmm.
than it was doing before.
I don't think Captain America will either. I don't think the Green Lantern will, you know? I mean,
what matters to the sales is how the comics are.
Yeah.
You know, sure, I would love to see people coming in to pick this stuff up after seeing all these cool movies and stuff. And I think the trailer for, like, Thor in particular, it's got my sister interested in seeing the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was like, maybe. No, it's like, now she wants to go see it.
Mm-hmm.
That in and of itself is a success.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that a success that can translate into a purchase of a comic? No.
No.
Will not happen. You know, I've known my sister her entire life. Not ever going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
No matter if I tell her it's the best thing since whatever. But the goal isn't to necessarily get her to buy a comic. It's to get the people who are potential comic book buyers to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
So I certainly wouldn't expect everyone who goes to see any one or all of these movies over the summer to suddenly become a comic reader.
I'll tell you what I'm kind of interested in picking up is, I know the movie kind of tanked this weekend, but Priest, I wouldn't mind finding the original manga and reading that. I think that would be a pretty good series to read.
Out of my comfort zone.
Is it?
Yeah, not the kind of thing I'd read.
Okay.
But I saw the commercials, thought it looked interesting.
Yeah.
I guess for me, one of the things with these trailers and stuff is anytime, oh, based on the graphic novel.
Yeah.
I can harp on terminology. I know this, but words are how we communicate. If the words are ill-defined, we cannot communicate well.
Mm-hmm.
A graphic novel, to me, is something that is original material, at least 96 pages, maybe as low as 64 or 80 if you're really generous.
Mm-hmm.
Sold one shot originally, hardcover or trade.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a graphic novel. Watchmen, not a graphic novel. Trade, paperback, hardcover, collected edition,
mm-hmm.
depending on the format, but it was a 12-issue comic book series. 305-issue miniseries. Collected into trade. I've got a nice hardcover of it, but not graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Walking Dead? Not even close.
But it sounds better to the uppity guy who was reading his Wall Street Journal and, you know, or New York Times Magazine and, hey, Green Lantern, based on the graphic novel, not based on the comic book.
Everyone knows it's a comic book. Nobody minds it's a comic book.
Exactly. I know. Exactly.
We have gotten pretty much, I'm not going to say entirely, but pretty much past that stigma of comics are for kids or whatever. People think this stuff is cool. People will pick up the games, they'll pick up the DVDs and stuff. What will it take to get them to pick up the trade paperbacks, the hardcovers, the comic books, whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I think getting them to get the comic books is a tough sell. Getting them into the trade paperbacks is pretty doable, I think. But that's something that's more likely going to happen at whatever mass market retailers are left.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Borders having left many towns and starting to have even harder times. I've heard things that make the health of Barnes & Noble sound a little more questionable than I'd care for.
Because
mm-hmm. Really, if that leaves town, I think the only bookstore I would have of note is Book People, which is one of the few independent bookstores in the nation left. The bottom line is to get people to read comics, they need to step into a comic store. Free Comic Book Day is a good step towards that, but as you said, you've seen people who could get to the store but wouldn't go in the store.
Yeah, no, they'll go in and get their comic books and walk right out. You know, they won't even bother looking at anything.
If it's free, yeah.
Yeah, it's disturbing. But you're going to have that kind of guy, you know, be that guy or be that dad.
And again, not a potential comic book reader, obviously.
No.
But if Free Comic Book Day was succeeding in raising sales, and I think it has succeeded in other areas, mm-hmm. but if it was succeeding in that, then we would be seeing higher sales.
Mm-hmm.
We are not. I mean, really, with the exception of Fear Itself number one, Mighty Thor number one, the highest selling book was under 76,000 units this month. You know, and we only had a couple of titles doing above, you know, 4,000 units on the trade side.
Mm-hmm.
So sales not going up. Don't think Free Comic Book Day is a success in that respect, nor would I expect it to be.
Mm-hmm.
However, during that same decade of this outreach program for the industry, look at how the perception of comics has changed. People think they're cool. People are aware of them. They know they're being published. It's worked in that respect, and if that's not an overwhelming success, I don't know what is.
Well, they're gaining on it. I don't know if it's a complete success yet. It's getting more mainstream.
People are aware of comics.
Yeah.
People like comics. People are willing to go to a comic store to pick up free stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think it's lame. They don't think it's for kids. So in terms of an acceptance level, and I certainly don't think Free Comic Book Day is the only thing that did this over the past
but
decade.
I think, don't you think there's a stigma when, I mean, people like you and I know that Road to Perdition, History of Violence, other, you know, what's the other one, Ghost World, you mm-hmm. know, we know those are based on comics or graphic novels or whatever you want to call them. But I think the movie industry does a lousy job when it comes to promoting those kinds of movies. And, you know, when the credits roll, oh, based on characters by Max Allen Collins. You know, that's all we get. It's not like based on the comic book or graphic novel Road to Perdition.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? I mean, so they kind of mask it too. And, you know, those are the types of movies that come out late summer, in the fall, you know, or something like that. They're not going to come out. Those
comics are still a long way from being considered real literature,
exactly.
real art.
Right.
No
right.
question about that.
Right.
But they've moved far enough towards that compared to where they used to be
mm-hmm.
that I think progress is being made, and I think that's
yeah.
a good thing. That, to me, sets the stage for later sales.
Mm-hmm.
And having easier on-ramps from, if you like this movie, go pick up this trade, would be a big help, and that's where the local stores are front
right.
and center.
Right.
And that's one of the things I love about the guys about Tribe, is they know I read a ton of stuff, yet they're always, hey, have you checked this out? I like this. What do you think about that? You know, I love that, you know? And, you know, they're able to, you know, them and other retailers across the nation, you know, oh, if you like this movie, you should check this out, or here's what it's based on. The writer also did
right.
this, you know. Those kinds of sales, you know, matchmaking is really the word for it. They're not trying to con anybody. They're just trying to make them help them find the stuff that's right for them.
And you know what else, John? I mean, there's some responsibility to Hollywood themselves too, and with the comic book companies. They've got to do a better job together. I mean, sure, you can hit a home run and have a 3-star movie out of 4 like Thor, or I'm sure Green Lantern will be 3 out of 4, you know. But, you know, when every Friday when the local paper comes out across the country, you got your movie reviews, right? And, you know, the typical family person will read those reviews, whether they're into comics or not. They're going to see and read what movies are out this week. And, okay, so you get Thor out there, and then you're going to get your Jonah Hex that gets 1 star. This movie, based on a comic book hero, sucks, you know, and that doesn't help the image of the comic book industry either.
No,
because that implies that the comic book sucks, too, in a way. which it doesn't, you know.
Which is an unfair thing, but it's a logical extension.
Right.
That people are going to go to that.
Right.
But I think we're at the point where a properly done propaganda campaign, really would be the best word for it, unfortunately, mm-hmm. But a PR campaign geared towards comics are cool, comics are real, comics are literature, kind of comics have substance to them. If positioned well and done just as a, you know how in some theaters they've got the little, here's the 30-minute infotainment show mm-hmm. about the movies that are coming out soon, maybe even the one you're about to watch? I mean, imagine if segments for that were being done, and really the people I would have do it would be Bruce Timm, Jeff Johns, maybe Kevin Smith,
mm-hmm.
Samuel Jackson, a couple of people. I mean, you know
you gotta get some names up there.
Gotta get some names, gotta get some people who know what they're doing, gotta get people who love comics. But I mean, did you see the DC Presents DVD that had the Shazam and the other backup features?
No, I didn't catch that one yet.
All right, and I don't remember if they did this on the other ones individually, but as they start each one, it kind of goes into a comic store, kind of weaving its way down. You pass Bruce Timm, who's reading a comic. It then zooms in essentially on a spinner rack at the far end of the store. On the cover, it's got the shot of the cover that's, you know, and the logo turns into, this is what you're about to see.
Oh, cool.
It does a really great job on, this is the comic book store, please come in. Here's some of the stuff in the store that you're about to go watch. You might find more here. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of a vibe. I would love to see something with that sensibility to it.
Right. But you just said it yourself. Look, who's already picking that up? The fanboy.
Preaching to the choir.
Yeah, exactly. See, I think that Free Comic Book Day is that step. I think Marvel and DC have to do a better job than just bringing out Brightest Day Zero or whatever, you know, the latest book is. They've got to put out some real good quality books and not just, you know, a one shot here and there. They got to, you know, make Fear Itself a free comic book, the number one issue.
Whether it's a free comic book, whether people have to buy it, it's got to be good.
Yeah,
it's got to be memorable. It's got to have legs. And one of the ones that I was just looking to see if it showed up on the list this time, and sure enough, it did. At rank 127, Superman Earth One, the hardcover.
Yeah.
It's been on the list 6 times before, did another 700 units, putting it around 35,301 units. Now, that was something when it first came out, got some pretty good media attention. It's had a couple of house ads in the DC Comics and stuff. It's still moving.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, 35,000 units over, you know, since October, I guess, so over 6 months. Compare that to the Superman title, which people generally agree kind of flopped when Straczynski took over. Mm-hmm. I think Chris
James?
No. Hang on, let me see if I've got the solicit stuff here on that. Chris Roberson.
Roberson. Roberson.
I think he's doing a great job on it. He's a really talented writer. But it is now doing 39,644 units just for issue 710. So that huge success of Superman Earth 1 in the direct market is still selling many months later less than the huge flop that Straczynski did in Superman.
Right.
In terms of how the buzz is judging these things. Personally, I'd probably go with the huge flop myself, too, to a degree. But, you know, hey. It's certainly gotten better with Roberson's writing helping out in some areas. But that's one of those where, again, that scale is different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is one that was being, it's a great seller, whatever. And for trade, actually, you know, it's continuing to accumulate sales, which is good. But I think part of it is you could take this list of trades, order it by the total reported estimated sales. In other words, how many estimated sales can we account for over the life of this thing showing up on the list? And you're going to see some that are at that nearly 250,000 unit, like Watchmen, mm-hmm. and those things where that number equals the estimated sales for this month, and a few in between. But very, there's a sweet spot of, okay, it's shown up a time or two, to it's a pretty regular recurrence on the list. You know, things like A Fables Volume 1.
Killing Joke.
Killing Joke, some of the Long Halloween, Hush, mm-hmm. Dark Knight Returns. A lot of Batman stuff, really.
Right.
You know, things of that nature.
Year One is on here again, yeah.
We've got the Flash in the Pan that showed up this month, maybe never again. This is a pretty regular, you know, thing we find on the list. And of course this is going to be on the list. How could it not? You know, and more things, as should be expected, are at that show up at once and almost never again kind of category. I mean, Sturgeon's Law, 90% of everything is crap.
Mm-hmm.
90% of everything isn't going to show up on the list every month. Just not going to happen.
Right.
So, you know, they need to take those high visibility, high acceptance items and kind of push those out beyond the comic book boundaries. They need to advertise beyond the comic book boundaries. But
where do you advertise to? In the LCS? Or
no, you've got to get out of the comic stores. Comic stores are our front line. I love them. I think we need to certainly target those that channel, that audience. But that's retain the converted. That's preaching to the choir, which, damn it, you got to do, and you got to do more effectively than they're doing now. But you got to have that outreach program. Free Comic Book Day is a great avenue for that, but we need to be getting comics in front of other people. We need to be getting people in the bookstores more aware, hey, there's this graphic novel section over here that's got some really cool things.
But when you see a Borders, you know, go $135 million in the tank, you know, I mean, you can't do it. I think what they need to do is advertise on TV and TV commercials. I mean,
Castle?
We had 10 years of Smallville. I didn't see one comic book ad.
Actually, with Smallville in the finale, they actually had a Smallville comic they showed. Even had the draw on the line at $2.99 on the cover.
I'm talking about an ad, though. I'm talking about an advertisement.
Ads during that are a harder sell because that's really expensive time.
I know.
You're going to have product placement, and that could be very effective.
I know. But, I mean, it's your finale. I think you could do it.
Again, there may be some legalities around that. Don't know.
No.
And the cost for that time, very expensive. What they really should have been doing is making that based on a comic book thing at the end that they've got to put in there a bit more prominent.
Yeah.
Okay? End on Smallville, based on the comics, you know, kind of a thing.
You know, read kind more of, in Superman, you know.
Do a read more about it kind of a thing.
Yeah.
That, I think, would have been a smart move. Castle, in its season finale, had, you know, hey, there's going to be a comic book based on one of his other characters.
Yeah, Bendis is doing it, isn't he?
It got
placement
in the show. Very big Marvel
logo. Oh, I'm talking about the... was that in the show they did that?
Yes.
Okay.
That's good product placement. Will it sell billions? Who knows?
Yeah.
But it's at least an attempt. You know, I think there are ways to get the stuff out there to a wider audience. But just promoting new stuff in previews and in-house ads, it's only preaching to the choir. You got to get the people that would be tempted to buy comics if they were in the right place at the right time kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Go after those. Again, by and large, sales were okay this month. We had 23 items again over the 2,000 mark. Only, you know, 5 over 3,000 on the trade side. List went down as low as 312 units down at the bottom. And it took until rank about 240, 239, 240 to break above 400. So again, we got a lot of things that are just kind of moving. And again, everything this is where having the increased list really helps. The list would have cut off previously a couple of years back at rank 100. The lowest item at that point would have been 790. So we have visibility into nearly another 100,000 units of sales, 99,512 or so, that we wouldn't have had before. And this gives us a better indication of how some of that lower stuff is doing.
Well, just looking at rank 292, we got the Essential X-Men Volume 6 coming in with a whopping 325 units.
That also
the Essential X-Men run is done, John. I mean, are we hit at saturation point?
That shipped the last week of the month. It's possible we'll see some split into next month.
Yeah.
It's also possible we won't.
Volume 5...
which shipped at the beginning of the month with 333 units. I'm thinking that's not a good sign.
Yeah.
What I find indicative of a poor handling of a property is at 263 we've got Stargate Daniel Jackson trade paperback.
362. Your favorite property, man. What's going on with that?
Dynamite will leverage the hell out of almost any property, but they get their hands on Stargate. They do a Daniel Jackson series as their second miniseries. They do the Vala Maldoran as the first. They give them crappy covers, bad placement in previews, don't really hype it. And are they doing anything else with the property? I mean, yeah, I don't know.
They ran it into the ground.
I'd like to see IDW pick this property up.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see them pick it up, and I think it would be fun for them to do some, you know, non-crossover-crossovers, kind of like they did with Infestation, maybe an actual crossover-crossover between, say, Star Trek and Stargate. Could be fun.
Oh, you know what? With the Essential X-Men, those are new additions.
Ah.
There we go.
Got it.
Sorry.
That makes sense.
The newest addition is, let's see, Volume 9 was a new edition that was released in 2009.
Yeah, but we only have three Essentials on the list. The other one was the Essential Thor. Yeah, 13,870 is not too bad. Mm-hmm. I think the Essentials, and really the Showcases for that matter, passed their time.
Mm-hmm.
It was taking them too long to get some of these out, and I think people got to the point where when some of this material started getting done in affordable trades, they'd rather have it in color.
Well, you know what? Marvel's not even really releasing brand new Essentials. They got one this month. They're bringing out the Web of Spider-Man in Essential format. And that's the first new one in a few months, I think. But they're kind of reissuing all these Essentials.
But I think they also hit the point in time with the Essentials where the material they were going to collect,
mm-hmm.
again, gets into that never-ending battle stuff. Now, granted, when you're doing 20 or whatever issues per, it's a little easier.
Mm-hmm.
But can you find a graceful in and out to the trade?
Well, you know, you can't. DC is kind of they're doing their showcases, but they're pretty much done, I think. I mean, they've hit their point. I mean, they've got the Trial of the Flash in Showcase. Now you've got the All-Star Comics run, the 70s revival of the JSA, or their, you know, with Power Girl gets introduced. That is going to be in a Showcase Presents format.
Which doesn't make sense. There are two trades of that are perfectly good in color.
Wonderful trades of that I've got on my shelf. Yeah.
We did. Bob and I did a back issue spotlight on that at one point. I forget which one.
Yeah.
That was fun stuff.
But I thought they should reissue those trade paperbacks as a one-volume trade paperback.
I see the desire to get the cheaper price point stuff out there, but I don't know how that's really benefiting them at this point.
Mm-mm.
We've got a Showcase Presents Volume 5 of the Green Lantern stuff in rank 21, 2,055 units, so there is a market for this.
That includes not only the Green Lantern team-up, or the Green Arrow team-up, but I guess it also includes all the Flash backups, which is nice.
Oh, interesting.
So I thought it was just the Green Lantern stuff. That's kind of cool.
I've still got a handful of issues of Flash and Green Lantern around that point in time I need to go get.
Mm-hmm.
So I can kind of read that era. But
I'm back into reading the Atlas era heroes, specifically the Namor Atlas that I picked up. I just, mm-hmm. you know, I'm on the kick. I just read the Bill Everett biography by Blake Bell that came out from Fantagraphics, the Fire and Water one.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm kind of into a Bill Everett kick right now. And according to the biography, his best Namor run was actually his Atlas era, the 1950s stuff.
Interesting.
So,
I find getting into the Golden Age stuff difficult
because
of the storytelling style.
Well, the Golden Age this is the 1950s stuff. It's a little bit better, a little more honed.
Silver Age stuff, the earlier it is, the harder it is. I've got to be in the right mindset. There was one point where I read some of the early, you know, Captain America after he gets thawed out stuff and loved it. There are other times I've tried to go back to that era, and it's just, it's hard.
Well, I read the, last year I read the Spider-Man, the Lee Ditko's. I thought it was fantastic. I loved it. And same with the early Daredevil. I loved it.
I am really surprised more people haven't tried to ape Tom Cater's podcasting format.
Because no one could do it better than Tom.
I think it'd be tough. I think it'd certainly be hard to measure up, but I'm sure somebody out there, maybe, if they could find the right property for them.
I talked to Tom face-to-face. He was in Detroit one time, and we were watching football one day, and I told him, this is when he was doing his first one, versus the Flash. Was that his first one?
I think it was Flash, then Justice League, then Aquaman.
He did. He was on Flash, and I said that I was going to do the Punisher, but I was going to do an issue by issue, and I'm like, there's no way I'd be nearly as funny, but just do a recap of every single issue. I'm like, if I do it, I'd have to quit my other podcast. There's no way I could do it, you know. And but I think that would be pretty fun to do.
I think there are some infinitely spoofable ones.
Oh, for sure. But Tom is so funny. I mean,
oh yeah.
I think he studied with Second City for a while.
I was gonna say he would need somebody who is either a professional stand-up comic or ought to be one. And again, Tom Cater's funny guy, and he knows his comic stuff. So between the two,
and he's quick. He's just so. Yeah. He occasionally does a Friday night Ustream and just by himself in front of the camera, and he just kind of feeds off whatever's on his mind and also the chat room.
Hmm.
And he's so quick. I mean, it's just so funny, you know.
That's the kind of thing, if more people were to stumble across that on like a YouTube or whatever, or watch it, hey, this is funny, whatever, that's an outreach program for comics.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Trying to think if we've got any fascinating trades and collected editions coming out in the coming months. It's going to be a little while before, obviously, the Flashpoint and Fear itself hits.
Yeah.
But we shall see. I mean, again, nice high watermark this month with Fables. We'll see how things look next month. I'm thinking more towards that 5,000-6,000 for the top.
Yeah. What'd you pick up lately? Anything good?
I picked up a couple of back issues. I've actually gotten into a really dangerous habit of having a list of items on my want list over at mycomicshop.com, and whenever I can get enough to fill up the $50 for free shipping, placing an order.
Yeah.
So I placed like three orders lately. The big thing that came out of that was the fourth issue of the Tron series that I guess it was Slave Labor did or whatever a couple of years back, so I now have the complete run.
Oh, cool.
Want to read that. Did a doubleheader of the Tron movies with my sister a couple of weekends back. That was fun.
Nice.
I picked up the first four issues of Comic Book Comics, which I had gotten onto with the fifth issue.
Oh, very cool.
So a late starter there.
I have not read those. I got to read those.
Beyond that, just a couple of things here and there to kind of fill out the order. I have gotten, I believe, all of the Usagi trades that I need. So at some point, if I think I can actually lift that Uber hardcover without killing myself.
You got the Fantagraphics one?
Oh, yeah. I got the Fantagraphics one. It's the 8,000-pound edition or whatever. It's huge.
No kidding.
It looks great. But at some point, I'm going to want to start to go through there. This is the in no immediate rush category, of course.
Right.
You know, just staying up on my comics is difficult some weeks. This past week was actually a quote-unquote small week for me. I'm actually doing the air quotes that nobody can see. With only about 35 comics. I just got my new shipment. It's about 50 comics or whatever. So last week I was able to get stuff done in time. I was actually able to read a real book over the weekend, which was kind of cool. Beyond that, nothing too exciting.
Yeah.
How about you?
Let's see, as far as big books go, I got the Doonesbury retrospective.
Cool.
That is a big, big book. That was kind of fun to have. Kind of skimming over that. It's kind of fun to, you know, that's political history at its best right there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's such a sign of the times. You have to remember what was actually going on, you know, when they cut to the White House. you know, Sundays and everything. It's pretty funny. You know?
Almost need to do that in a tabloid-sized thing where on one page you've got the front page of the relevant newspaper, on the other page you've got all the comics about it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, because if you don't remember what was going on like that week or that two-week period when Trudeau, what, he's 2 weeks out usually? Mm-hmm. You just miss it, you know, you don't know what the hell is going on, but it's fun to have. And then, like I said, I've been getting back into the Atlas era, specifically Namor, and I'm loving the Swamp Thing, the Alan Moore Swamp Thing hardcovers. I just read Volume 4, Volume 5 is coming out in June, Volume 6 is going to be out in October, and I think that'll do it. And boy, I don't know what to read after that. I'm like, you know, I'm jonesing for, I'm so into this Alan Moore stuff, John. It's so good. I'm like, how come I haven't read this before, you know?
I was reading, I got onto Swamp Thing, actually with Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah.
That's when whatever I hadn't been getting on DC pretty much got onto my pull list.
That one is in Volume 4, that issue.
Yeah, and I stayed with that, I think, through the end of the series.
Oh, really?
Maybe. Maybe not. I'm trying to think. Because it turned over into a few different series a time or two, and I didn't pick up but the first issue of, like, when Tefe or whatever was the Swamp Thing and some stuff like that. And there were a couple of times it got a little further out there than I liked, but when it was, we'll say, Vertigo Light-ish, AE was brilliant, yeah. Really curious what's going to happen both with the Swamp Thing and Constantine properties and with Vertigo and Hellblazer with what's going on after Brightest Day.
Well, that's why I might get into Hellblazer after this. I've never read Hellblazer.
It is one of the longest
running... It's 400 issues, yeah, I know.
I thought it was only up to about 230...
Oh, is that it? Okay, that could be
wrong. It's in the late 200s. Give me a sec, I will see if I can find it on the list. It is like the longest continually running DC title that has not revamped, rebooted, retrenched.
Yeah.
278 is what came out in April.
Okay.
But that has been, as far as I know, not having read but the first 10 issues maybe of that title, been a pretty continual narrative for Constantine, you know, since he walked out of the pages of Swamp Thing. I mean, you compare that to everything else at DC, where they've killed off Superman, brought him back, replaced him, broken Batman's back, retrenched, you know.
Right.
They've done enough relaunches, reboots, and so forth on most of their other titles that's really their most evergreen, if you will. A lot of people love that title.
I wonder if, I don't even know this, if DC started to do those in a hardcover?
I would imagine. I'm certain they've got tons of hardcovers and trades on those.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. Yeah.
Damian, Lord Shaper and stuff would be the go-to guy on that.
Yeah, I should contact Damian.
He routinely, you know, promotes that book on the previews podcast or preview spotlight episodes of the podcast, which
yep.
I think is great. He does a great job covering the Vertigo stuff and other things of that ilk, which, you know, I just don't read that stuff. So.
No.
Not to my tastes, and I'm glad somebody is helping champion those books on the podcast for us, because there are a lot of people who will like that.
Yeah, it just, you know, it kind of it leads right into a Swamp Thing to Hellblazer, because that's where it's from, but I think it would just be a pretty easy transition, you know?
I'm just hoping they're able to keep Hellblazer going.
Yeah,
with what they're doing in the DC Universe.
Mm-hmm.
It would be, I would hate to see Vertigo kind of implode.
I don't think they'd be idiots to do that. I mean,
yes, they would. That doesn't mean they won't. I hope they won't. I don't think they will, but you never know.
Yeah.
So what do you got coming up on your show?
You know, I got one due out soon. I don't know. I think it's just going to be a rant of whatever is on the top of my head kind of thing.
Cool.
Nothing specific. So, what about you?
We've got the usual stuff. We've got the Weekly Comics Spotlight coming up, a couple of back issue spotlights. I'm trying to think what else. Those are the ones that pop to mind at the moment. usual, you know, we do the previews once a month, do the interviews, obviously talk about the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much same old, same old. We talked about Flashpoint this past week. We're going to talk about the fifth issue when it comes out, because apparently only DC comic coming out that week, so pretty easy pick.
Yeah, I found that kind of interesting when I read that.
We'll see how that works.
Mm-hmm.
I think the way they've been marketing Flashpoint is unfortunate. I really think they shot it in the foot out of the gate.
Yeah.
The haiku style, you know, solicits, the Z-list, you know, lead characters for the most part. I want to like it. I'm a huge Flash fan. I thought the first issue was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's not one of those that just blew me away.
Did you like Fear Itself better?
First issue of Fear Itself was good. The second issue was too much of the cliff notes. I felt it was the highlight reel, not the story.
Right, right.
I really think... I mean, I fully understand why Marvel and DC are going back to the well on these events.
Mm-hmm.
I really think they need to be focusing on getting each individual title as strong as it can be.
Mm-hmm.
They're focusing too much on expanding the forest, and they've got dying trees. They need to shore up the health of each of these individual trees, and then the forest will expand on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Easier said than done.
I haven't read Flashpoint yet, and I don't know if I will, but I'm picking up Fear Itself. I like it so far. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
But I haven't picked up any of the ancillary titles yet, though. So maybe I should. Like Thor or something like that. I don't know.
In both cases, I'm getting pretty much all... Well, not pretty much. I am getting all of the ancillary titles for both. Mm-hmm. Bob is not. He's getting a couple here and there. No doubt that will be coloring our opinions of discussions upcoming.
Mm-hmm.
How can it not? You know, I'm going to be coming at it from a different vantage point than he will.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim for me. I mean, neither's mm-hmm. a better vantage point than the other necessarily. One's simply going to be more informed with what's actually happened in the rest of the story,
mm-hmm.
And the other will be able to tell how the story stands on its own.
That's going to make for a good discussion, I think.
It'll make for an interesting discussion. Whether it's good or not, I leave up to the listeners. Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
That'll be fine.
Yeah. Now, Bob's a good guy, and I certainly can't fault him for cutting back on some of the stuff. I think they are oversaturating on these events.
No, I can never blame anybody for cutting back on their comic book.
It is...
because there's so much out there. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know? And congratulations on the CNN article. That was kind of cool. Can you talk about that real quick?
Yeah. We've had a couple of times where a CNN reporter or two will ask us for a couple of comments on an upcoming story, and... Usually it's okay, and shoot them a whole bunch of stuff, and they'll pick and choose a couple of quotes and use that. This time, the questions were around Geoff Johns and Flashpoint, kind of, you know, what makes Geoff Johns the same or different from everybody else? You know, how do you think Flashpoint's going to do compared to, you know, and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I think Geoff Johns has the potential right now to be one of the most influential people in comics, both at the moment and potentially ever, and that's unlikely, but possible. I mean, he's in a position to be essentially the next Stan Lee, the next spokesman for comics.
Mm-hmm.
He truly understands comics. He understands film and television.
You don't think Bendis or Kirkman is something like that?
No, not at all.
Really?
Not at all.
Okay.
I think those guys are... writers of comics, they can do other things, not saying they can't, but I think there's a sufficiently different mindset with Geoff Johns, who has a true love of comics, and I don't think just DC comics. I think of the medium and understanding of it, and has been able to help successfully leverage a number of properties in, you know, the Hollywood arena.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at the Booster Gold Blue Beetle episode of Smallville. Look at the Justice Society episodes they've done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's been able to take a number of characters that in some respects were hard sells to do that way. I mean, Beetle and Booster, full costume. You know, that's not something they typically do on Smallville.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's obviously had a huge hand both in the Green Lantern comic book stuff, now in the Green Lantern movie stuff, I think his role at DC has the potential of being a really good kind of front man, spokesperson for comics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's personable, he's a smart guy, he's got the street cred on the comic stuff. I really think he's got the goodwill of the fans behind him. You know, he's truly a fan, and I think that's great. That having been said, I think DC shot him in the foot with Flashpoint, the way they marketed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think what he did on Blackest Night, that was, I would say, one of the most successful creatively, certainly sales-wise, did pretty good too, but one of the most successful creatively book event things that DC's ever done. You know, it started strong, it stayed strong, and it ended strong. You know, again, one issue into Flashpoint, who knows how that'll do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, being able to have CNN come to me and say, hey, we'd like, you know, what do you think? You know, it was just kind of cool. They've done that a few other times on Fantastic Four's, you know, death issue and a few things like that. And, you know, there are a couple of things that they don't use, nor do I expect them to, you know. With the Fantastic Four, I'm like, yeah, and here's how I expect it's going to play out over the next year. Johnny comes back in this issue this way, you know, like so. And I did the same thing with Flashpoint. You know, I think the ancillary titles are going to sell across the board. This one's probably going to be at the bottom. What do you expect? You know, and that's, again, not something I would expect them to use, but I think it's good information for the guy writing the article to have. Because if they decide to come back and do how did this pan out? Maybe they will, maybe they won't, but you know what I mean.
Totally, yeah.
But it's kind of cool to do that, because then when the article comes up, I can, you know, tell people at work, hey, go to CNN on that front page, go to this article. It's just kind of cool.
Excellent.
So anything else, or does that pretty much wrap it up?
I think that'll do it, man. Yeah.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by John Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activities should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of the top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales through competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond Comics' distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.